Okay, so we're on Daf Nun Beis tonight, I think. Okay, let's go. Oh, Nun Aleph today. Nun Aleph today. Okay, and by the way, I forgot to mention, last night was dedicated by me on the occasional yahrzeit side of my grandfather, Yitzchak Ben Binyamin, Zichrono Livracha. All right, so if you remember yesterday, we spoke about this halach in the Mishnah, Imo Sin Lachilat Peirot, which means, if you remember, Reuben the thief sells Shimon the Tzaddik Black Acre, and unbeknownst to Shimon, Reuben had really stolen Black Acre, and Shimon is busy working, he puts money in, and he has a whole crop, and then Levi, the true owner, shows up and seizes Black Acre from Shimon. So Levi's got to pay him for whatever money he put into Black Acre, but there's still more of an investment. He's got the whole payroll, things like that, so Levi's not paying him for it. So with respect to the corpus, the principal amount that he paid for the property, and again, Reuven had given him achrayus. Reuven had, you know, given him like sort of like a type of title insurance, or he, you know, would think. So with as far as that amount of money, let's say he paid $10,000 for Black Acre. So the $10,000, if necessary, he can go to the lekuchot. In other words, even if Reuven had property, no longer has property, but he sold the property after Shimon bought it, after Shimon bought Black Acre, he can go to this other lekuchot and seize the assets. But with respect to the payroad, that he can only go to Reuven. So the Gemara says, let's just review just a few lines, then we'll go back on Nun Amud Beis 50b, at two dots in the payroad, my timer, why is it for the payroad? Malka, can you sit closer or may I move 1 degree later? Okay, she's moving. Okay, good. I'd like to see everybody now. So he says here, so my time of why is it that for Achila Peirot he cannot go to the Lekuchot? Amar Ulam Reish Lakish Lefish Ein Ketuvin. He says because it's not written down. In other words, it's not in the stars. So the easiest shot is like the Tosfos Rid. The Tosfos Rid says Bechlal wasn't in the star, so it's not in the star. You can't collect from Lekuchot. But the way Rashi learns, it is in the star, but the Peirot have not yet come, and people aren't publicizing that. So he can't collect it. And the Gemara gets into a whole little side issue. But let's flip down now to two lines from the bottom on Nun Amud Beis 50b, page 100, two lines from the bottom. Rabbi Chanina Amar Lefi Shein Ketuvin. So Rabbi Chanina says the reason that he cannot go to the Lekuchot is not because it's not in writing. It's because it's in Ketuvin. It's not a finite amount, not a set amount. In other words, it's unfair to us. It could be like a commercial decision. We want people to feel free to buy properties. And if a person has a situation like this with something with Zabar Kenu Katsav, nobody could ever buy property from him. So therefore, we don't give it right to go. In other words, if I'm a lokeach, I'm interested in buying property from Reuven, and Reuven has this sort of, obligation, which is not finite. I don't want to get involved with him. So the Fishing Ktuvin. So Ibailhu, so the question is asked in the base medrash, the Reb Chanina, Suvin Ktuvin Bai. Reb Chanina is saying, I need two elements. I need it to be in writing, and I need it to be a Dabar Katz of a set amount in order to collect from the Lekuchot or the top line under Nalaf Amad Aleph. Odilma, Suvin Bi'af Fishin Ktuvin. Or perhaps Reb Chanina is saying, all I need is a Dabar Katz of. If you look at Rashi, the top line, Suvin Bi'af Fishin Ktuvin. In which case, if he would hold this way, he would hold that an oral loan, but if it's a finite set amount, you could collect from the chasim mishubadim. Tosfos has some problems with this, but we're going to stay with Rashi. So that's the question we're going to deal with, okay? So again, with Rabbi Chanina says, the reason in the Mishnah that he can't collect from the payroll, from the chasim mishubadim, from the people who purchased from Reuven, Shimon can't go to the people who purchased the property from Reuven to collect the payroad, because it's a Dabar Shinokatsev. We don't know how many payroad he's going to have to collect until it actually happens. So Tashma, so we're trying to bring a proof from the following machloket. De Itmar, Mishtame, Hiniyah, Shtebanot, Uben. If Yaakov dies and he left two daughters, Rachel and Leah, and a son, Reuven. So again, Yaakov is the head of the estate. He has two daughters, Rachel and Leah, and one son, Reuven. And then Yaakov dies. Yaakov's dead. So he says, "B'kadma rishon abanat la'isra nechasim." So daughter number one, again, the daughters are entitled to be supported But in addition to which, when the daughters get married, they're entitled to a tenth of the estate as their dowry. Let's look at Rashi on this on the second wide line. Nazla Isra Nechasim, she, Rachel, took a tenth of her Nechasim. Shemesh Parabanot, that's the law of the daughters. Bishat Bagrid Onisun, when they get older or they marry. Now, Litot Isra Nechasim, take a tenth, Bachtasat Parnasat Nidunyatan, Laban Mashi Zon Mazonarado Tashab. Besides, separate in fact from the fact of being supported, they're entitled to the 10% cut as dowry. We assume that that's what Yaakov would have given had he been alive. Now, if you look, there's a little strange circle near Bishat Yigbagrut. So Rabbi Libus is pointing out, if you look in the Gilgamesh Shas lower in the Daf, so the Gilgamesh Rabbi, this Rabbi Kiva Eger, he says, that's a Rithion Ma'od, this Nazal Ian. In other words, the Gemara never mentions anything about Shat Bagrut that a woman can check out. She gets old enough, she gets Isra Nechasim. That's something Rashi put in. And where does Rashi get that from? Then he was quoting, he said, the Sifta Gemara quoted a Sefer Yad Yitzchak, I think. He said that he wants to like sort of, you know, cut the difference between the two and say that if she sits back and doesn't assert her rights, she doesn't get the money. But in Echonami, if she's a Bulgarian and asserts her rights, she does get Isra Nechasim. But again, we're focusing on the younger girls. They get an Isra Nechasim. So back in the Gemara, the top line, Tashma, Omer Itit Bar Mishamei, Yaakov dies, Vinishti Banu Ben, he leaves over two daughters and a son, Bekamer Shomanat Isra Nechasim. So the first daughter got married, and she just took 10% of the estate. So imagine, you know, a stage of 10%. Below his speaker, Shmila Gabot, and then daughter number two, Leah, didn't get around, I guess, to getting married, and so didn't take 10%. She made a Ben. And then Reuven died. It's a catastrophe. Reuven dies. Now, if the father dies and the son dies and there's no other Yorshim, the women, the daughters, get the whole Yerusha. So now these two daughters are going to split the Yerusha. The main Yerusha is 90% of the original Yerusha. They're going to divide it 45%, 45% each one of the original one. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shnei Avitra. Rabbi Yochanan says the second one, meaning Leah, has forfeited her right to the Isra Nechasim. Let's see Rashi on this, on the second arrow line. Shnei Avitra, Ibda Isra Nechasim Shala, she lost her 10% dowry. We don't say, you know what, let her take, now that Reuben is dead, let her take 10% off the top, and then she and Rachel will divide. In other words, so it'll be, let's say, this is the way Roy Lewis was saying, let's say 100%, so 20% off the top, 80%, and then they'll divide the remaining 40%, 40%. No, we're saying now that you get 45%. The Tama, the Tekinum, Isra Nechasim, Shri Levano, Parnasat Nisuin. The whole reason they did Isra Nechasim is to see that they're covered, that, you know, their marriage needs are covered. She's got a lot of money. She's got a whole estate, and the economy wouldn't work out quite as much as if she had checked in earlier, but she doesn't have the Isra Nechasim. Back in the Gemara on the fifth line near the Aleph, and the Bach changes it to Amarle, not the Amarle. Amarle, Reb Chanina. So Reb Chanina is more interested. Remember Reb Chanina we had just a few lines ago. Reb Chanina we were wondering about when he says Davar Katsav, does have to be written, or even Davar Katsav alone, you can collect from Nechasim Shubadim. Amarle Reb Chanina, so Reb Chanina says to Reb Yochanan, Gidolami Zomru, what do you mean? They said that the remaining daughters have even more rights than you're affording them. He says, Motzin le Parnasa, be Motzin le Mazono. They said that, let's say, the son would yarshin the father, and he would sell off the property, so the daughters can go to the Lekuchot and force them and seize the property as part of their nidunya, as part of their nidunya. He says, the emotion, but from Zono, they can't do that. Van Amrichnia Vitra, and you're saying that the second daughter has given up the rights. In other words, you're saying because Reuven is dying, so Leah has given up her right to Isra Nechasim. But we see the Isra Nechasim, it's even, you know, supportable, even though it's not in writing, and even though the father died, the son sold off the property, she has a right to collect it. So the right is from Ruchanina's statement that Motzin LaParnasa, that the daughters have a right to go to Lekuchot to collect the Isra Nechasim. So he says, Baha Parnasa to make its kaitza mitav loktifa. So the din of Isra Nechasim, that's only, it's not writing, it's, you know, the Chachamim said this is the halakha, so everybody's a notice of it, but it's not in writing, and yet it's mefurish to Rebbe Chanina himself. We're wondering how Rebbe Chanina holds. Rebbe Chanina holds that in Achinami, if it's a davar katsuv, a set amount, which it is, that Mimela, you can collect it, the Kamotzia. So if everything holds true, we have a raya, we think the Rav Chanina holds that a Dabar Katsuv, you can collect from the Chasim Mishubat. That's the way it's going. So the Gemara deflects the proof. Shani Parnasa, so Parnasa means the dowry. The dowry is different. Why? Came into Itlay Kala, it has a kol, meaning everybody knows about this. If you look at Rashi around the 20th hour line, Didla Kala, Misha Ashamir Ha'av, from the time the father dies, I call Yodim Shabbat Notelet Eastern Akasim. It's a Davar Mefursim. Yadu Mefursim. Everybody knows the daughters are entitled to an Eastern Akasim. Kaman Dechtiba Dami. So that's as if it's written. So when you write, it isn't written, but why is writing so important? Because it gets publicized when people put it to writing. So then the people, you know, feel free and they speak about it. So the Gemara tried to bring a raya as to what Rav Chanina holds, and the Gemara deflected the raya. Okay, who's got questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did so far? I guess the fast makes people quieter. Okay, now let's see further in the Gemara. Okay, now see, the thing is like the transitions. Mativ Rav Huna Bar Manoach, this is going back to the earlier halacha that we said. So again, earlier in yesterday's daf, which went over briefly at the beginning of today's daf, Abra Ulam Reish Lakish, the Pisha Ink Tubin. So Ula says that in Reish Lakish, in order to collect from the Kufod, it has to be something that's in writing. You have to have an obligation in writing in order to be able to collect from the Lekuchot. So back in the Gemara, Manti Rav Huna Bar Manoach, so Rav Huna Bar Manoach asks Kasha from the following Braisa. It says, Meitu benotem nizono minachasim vechorim, hini zon minachasim shubadim, neshi kabbalah chov. This is talking about a case, this is actually a Mishnah to Emin 6, Mishnah Masech Tubot. So the Mishnah over there is talking about, let's say, Reuven, two men marry women, but it means Reuven marries Rachel, and Rachel has a daughter from a prior marriage. So Reuven says, no problem, I'm going to support your stepdaughter, my stepdaughter, I'll support her for 5 years, he says. And then he has children with Rachel, and then he divorces Rachel. Then Rachel marries Shimon, and Shimon also says, don't worry, I'll support your daughter, which is my stepdaughter. And then they have daughters together. And then Reuben and Shimon both die. Then Reuben and Shimon both die. Or well, let's see. Like, so he says, so both Reuben and Shimon die. Benoteim nizonot minechasim bnei chorin. So their natural daughters are entitled to support from their existing estate. In other words, bnei chorin are the assets at hand, not assets they had sold. The stepdaughter, we're going to focus on that stepdaughter. He says, nizonot minechasim mishubadim. She can collect from the nechasim that they sold. Neshihi kabalachov. She's like a creditor. She's a balachov. So the Gemara says, so the point is that obligation is not an obligation, which is writing. And Ula said in the Rabbi Yochanan that only when you have an obligation in writing, Ula said, I'm sorry, in the name of Reish Lakish. Ula said in the name of Reish Lakish that only if you have an obligation in writing, then I can go to Lekuchot. And here in the Mishnah, I have a case with the stepdaughter was promised by these various husbands, you know, to support her, and then they died. She can go to Lekuchot. She can go to Lekuchot from Reuven, Lekuchot from Shimon, and collect, you know, her support. So she's a balako, but it's not in writing. So it seems that that's a kasha against Ula name of Reish Lakish. Well, no. I'll pause when you'll ask questions, okay? So we get to the two dots, you pause. So the Gemara says, get a pad out and write it down. So hachavavayaskinan. So the Gemara says, what's the case that the Mishnah is speaking about, the Shekano Miyado, that they did a kinyan. In other words, they made a kinyan, the Edim made a kinyan with these two, deceased husbands. And the Gemara takes it, either if you're doing a kinyan, like it will be put in writing, or it's tantamount to putting it in writing. Since, you know, you do the kinyan, it's like it's publicized. So it's equivalent to being in writing or that it isn't writing. So ihachi baronami the shekana ihachi baronami. So that's the case. So what about their own natural daughters? Wouldn't we construe it that they made a kinyan for that? In which case they should also be able to collect from nechasim shubarim. The shekana lezuv lo kana lezuv. So the Gemara says that the Mishnah is talking about. We think in order to defend Ula in the name of Reish Lakish. That's why we're doing all this. He says the shekana lezuv lo kana lezuv. That they made a kinyan for the stepdaughter, but they didn't do a kinyan for their own natural daughters. So my paskus, the Gemara says, why would the Tana teach me such a strange situation? They did a kinyan for one, they do a kinyan for the other. So the Gemara says, you're right. You did taka, they must have done a kinyan for both. But ishto, the Havai b'shat kinyan, mahani la kinyan. He says, that the stepdaughter, who was alive and being at the time the kinyan was done, so the kinyan effect is helpful for her. But the daughters who were not yet lives and being, lo mahani lakinyan, the kinyan does not help for them. So the Gemara says, milo askinyan davu tarvai b'shat kinyan. Well, who says? Maybe that everybody's alive at the time of the kinyan. How could everybody be alive? Because Reuben is marrying Rachel and she's coming with a stepdaughter, and he says, don't worry, I'll support your daughter, and that's when he makes the promise. So his own daughter. So he says, the Garsha Bahadra. In other words, the case could be, this sounds like a strange case, that Reuven marries Rachel, Rachel has the stepdaughter. Then Reuven, you know, then Reuven and Rachel split up, and they have daughters together. Then Reuven and Rachel split up. Then Reuven remarries Rachel. So then at the time of the remarriage, he makes all these promises and kinyanim, don't worry, dearest, it'll be good now, and I'll support your stepdaughter, and of course I'm going to support my own daughters. And then the same thing with Shimon. Shimon, then he divorces her, and Shimon marries Rachel, and then they have some daughters together, and then he divorces her, and then he remarries her. So he says, so everybody could be alive. Ella, so the Gemara is trying to understand, why is it that the stepdaughter can collect from the Chasim Shubadim, but the natural daughters cannot? So the Gemara says, Ella, Bito, the B'tanai Beitin Ka'achla, Lomahani Lakinyan. The daughter who has to be supported by Tanai business, like statutory, a man has to support his daughter, the kinyan doesn't help. And the Gemara is going to ask in a second, that seems counterintuitive. The kinyan only makes things stronger, doesn't like, you know, make it weaker. But for a moment, we just listen to it. He says, there, the kinyan doesn't help. But Ishto, the Lapa Tanai Beitin Ka'achla, but the stepdaughter that isn't covered by any statutory obligation to support her, Mahani Lakinyan, the kinyan helps her. So the Gemara is saying that in Achinami, he's doing a kinyan for all the daughters, stepdaughter and natural daughters, and both Reuben and Shimon are doing that. But at the end of the day, the stepdaughter gets superior rights to the natural daughters. And now we have to figure out why. So the Gemara says, Bechi Migur Gara, so are the natural daughters in a worse state because he did a kinyan with them? Ella, Bito, so the Gemara says they shouldn't be. In other words, they're doing a kinyan, should help more. Ella, Bito, came the time, Beitin Ka'achla, the daughter, the natural daughters, since they're you know, being supported, where they would be obligated to support by Tanai Bezdin, Emar Srori Akasa. It's reasonable for us to assume that the father, during his lifetime, gave them some money to support themselves and took care of them. So therefore, we're not going to enhance their rights to go to the Nechasim Shubadim. Masha Enkein, the stepdaughter, we are. Now, in terms of the rights, though, the Gemara is saying at the end of the day, that they did a kinyan, and a kinyan is like being in writing. So it's the kasha has been deflected. Again, to Ula said the name of Reish Lakish, it has to be in writing. So the Gemara asked the question from this whole Mishnah with the stepdaughter, nothing's in writing. So they said they did a kinyan, but then we got to a thing, why do we do a kinyan for one, not a kinyan for the other? So at the end of the day, the Gemara says, doing kinyan for everybody, but, and indeed, either it is or it's tantamount to the same as being in writing, and everybody knows about it. So the question is deflected. It's not a question anymore against Ula named Reish Lakish, but we have reason to suspect that a father, you know, takes care of his own natural daughters, you know, during their lifetime and gives them something. So therefore, we're not going to give them the right to collect from Lekuchot. All right. Who's got questions, comments, or thoughts? Now, let's hear from Malka. Go ahead.
Right.
No, wait. And then he does a kinyan for the daughters as well. But the Gemara said he did do a kinyan. You're going to Hava, Mina, you're saying? The Gemara said he does a kinyan for everybody.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Okay, wait, I'm waiting to hear the question. Ruth, it's a good long question. Wait, let me put this in front of her. Then you can hear her, and then I don't have to repeat anything. Okay, 1 second. Okay, all right.
So here's my question. My question is that the father sells the property, right? He sells the property to other people. So why isn't she entitled to the money that he got, or the net value of the money that he got for selling the property? The stepdaughter. No, you said he can go to the Kahot.
So it means like this. Okay. So it means, let's say the money's not around anymore. In other words, like he that's why she's going to the Kuchot. If you had the money, I wouldn't need to. The money's not. No. B'nai Chorin, she can collect from assets that are in the estate. She can collect. Yeah, absolutely. That she can collect. Okay, all right. Now let's go. I'm going to go further in the Gemara. All right, now we're okay. Tashma. So now we're going back to this machloke between Ula and Rabbi Chanina. So we never fully clarified Rabbi Chanina, but Ula said if it's in writing, you can collect from the Kuchot. It's not in writing, you can't collect from the Kuchot. And Ula's just concerned that the Lokim are on notice that, you know, what they're getting into. I guess in a way you could say everybody's concerned about that. Rabbi Chanina says the key element is that a Dabar Katzav. It's like the set amount. And if it's a set amount, then you can collect. And we weren't 100% of Avara where it has to be in writing as well, according to Rabbi Chanina. All right. So now, Tashma. It's a little tricky here because the Gemara like goes from topic to topic, like back and forth. And so the Gemara says Tashma. So now we're quoting from tonight, from a Braisa. Amar Rabbi Natan, Eimatai Bisman Shekedam Mecho Shosheni L'Shvacho Shorishon. So means in the case in the Mishnah, we're going back to the Shimon who bought the property from Reuven the robber. Shimon the Tzaddik bought the property from Reuven the robber. So we said he cannot collect payroad from the Lekuchot. His payroad he can only collect from Reuven. He can't go to Lekuchot. So the Rabbi Natan is saying, Eimatai, when is this true that he, Shimon, has no rights vis-a-vis the Lekuchot? Bisman Shekedam Mecho Shosheni L'Shvacho Shorishon. That's when, let's say, Zvulun was a later purchaser from Reuven, but when his purchase took place before the fruits, you know, grew on the field. In other words, Shimon came, he invested, you know, property in and then all the payroll, then the, you know, $1,000 of payroll grew on the property. So if Zvulun bought the property before that, then Shimon can't go to Zvulun. But if Shimon improved the property and then Zvulun comes around and buys it, according to Rabbi Natan, then and under those circumstances, Shimon does have a right. So in other words, if the fruits had come into being, you know, before Zvulun, the bona fide buyer or purchaser, you know, purchased the property from Reuven, then you have a right to go against him. So that sounds like that even though it's not in writing, even though the right to payroad is not in writing, we said the payroad was not in writing, either the Gufa was not in writing, Kotosis Rid, or according to Rashi, it's equivalent not to being in writing. So even though it's not in writing, it's saying you could do that. So Alma, Mishum Lo Kadimhu. So it seems that the whole issue is, you know, about the priority. So the Gemara says Tanayi. It's really a Machloka Tanayi. The Tanya, we're learning the Braisa. Everybody with me? Michael is with us. So he says, the Tanya, in Motziin Lachilat Peirot, L'Shevachar Kaud, L'Mazon Isha Rabbano, in the Chasim B'Shubadim, De Tikan Olam. The Braisa is filling in more than the Mishnah. It says, I can't go to collect the payroll, which we've discussed. The Shevachar Kaud is the appreciated value of the field. And the Mazon Isha Rabbano, like support for, you know, the widow and her daughter, and the daughter, and the daughter, not her daughter, it's everybody's daughters, Minachasim Shubadim, Ne Tikana Olam, because Tikana Olam Lufish Ink Tub, because it's not in writing. So that sounds like you just needed to have it in writing. That's the issue. Is it in writing or not in writing? From the first opinion, that sounds got to be in writing. That first opinion supports Ula in the name of Reish Lakish. Amar Rabbi Yossi, this is still in the Braisa, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Bechima Tikana Olam Yishbazu. What Tikana Olam is that? In other words, he, Rabbi Yossi, holds, even if it's in writing, you can't collect. He says, "Valo in ktuvin." It has to be a davar katzuv. And so that supports Rabbi Chanina. Okay, who's got questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did so far? Okay, let's go on. Now we're 6 lines from the bottom. If you remember, we said in the Mishnah again, the Mishnah is mentioning, and all the Mishnayim are mentioning things for Tikkun Olam, things that the Chachamim, you know, we're talking, although we learned one shot that it was like with Rabbi Shmuel, it was within Rabbi Akiva, right? Within Rabbi Akiva, he learned like within what's the reason the Torah is metakin this way. But to the simple shot, generally speaking, that first case may be a little unusual, according to Rabbi Akiva, but generally it's enactments that Chachamim are doing for Tikkun Olam, for societal benefit. So one Tikkun they do is a motzi mitzia lo yishava. If I find somebody's lost object, let's say I find a wallet and I bring it back and it has the name of the person, the owner of the wallet, and I bring it back and there's $100 in the wallet, I bring it back to him. He says, you know, I had $500 in this wallet. I want to take a shua. And the guy says, no, it was only $100. Take a shua. So with they tikkun olam, nobody's going to want to return anything if you got to take a shua. So for tikkun olam, they said, if you find something, return it. You don't have to take a shua. Okay, that's a tikkun olam. Oh, we got it? Okay, this is a new topic now. Okay, so the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yitzchak. Now, Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion seems to be at variance with what we just learned from the Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak. Shnei kisim shurin. Let's say a person had two purses that were tied to one another, maybe two pouches that were tied together, and he lost it. He says, shnei kisim shurin matzatali. In other words, the person comes forward, he said, I found this. So the person who lost the wallet said to him, you found, I lost two wallets that we tied together. He said, I only found one wallet. He says, nishba. So according to Rabbi Yitzchak, the finder does have to take a shua. Now, the key is, here, the person who lost the object is coming with the tanis bari. I'm sure I left two, and we'll see in the Gemara. So he's coming with the tanis bari, and the person says, no. So it's like a motor but mixed type of situation. But, shnei shvarim kshurin matzatali, he says, you know, the guy sets up, I said, here's your ox, you know, it has your whatever, what do they call it when they brand it, right? It has your brand on and I'm bringing it to you. He says, but I lost two, I there were two oxes. He says, there's only one, ain't no nishba, then he does not take a shvua. My time, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, shvarim enachem yadani. In other words, the shvarim could have been tied together, but it's the nature of oxen to kind of pull apart from each other. So, in other words, in one case, the person who lost the object can come on the tanis bari. I left two wallets, they were tied together, didn't by themselves come apart. You bring me one, so I want to take a shua. With the shvarim, yeah, they're tied together, but the shvarim pull away from each other. They could easily, that's a tanis safek. Now, third case, kisim lo menachi ne'adani. And then he says, wallets don't come apart by themselves. Third case, shnei shvarim kshurin matzata. He says, you found two shvarim. And he says, yeah, I did find two shvarim. Yeah, but I returned one already, and here's the other one. So he says, no, you never returned one. There was I either one, two, but I returned one again. I raised the nishma. So in that case, he has to take a shua. Now, let's just see the Rashi on this. We'll do five lines from the bottom. In Rashi, last medium wide line in Rashi. To the farish tama, lomanachi me'adani. Wallets don't come apart by themselves. The lost parity is making a certain claim. C-E-R-T-A-I-N. Achareisha chamihem yadzeh, v'hare hodal of mixats. In other words, I lost two wallets that we tied together, coming with one wallet, so I'm making a tanis bari, so take a shua. But the shvarim, they come apart by themselves. So all they can do is make tam shema. I think they were together, but I don't know. He says, shnei shvarim kshurim matzatali, v'lo mer matzati, v'tzarti l'cha, chadmihen, eriz anishba. So he says, yeah, I did find two oxen, but I returned one to you. Shekein, hu shehetzir lo ha'cha, dagle nami tana v'adayit. That's also a tana v'adayit. The alpha p, shlo ra'ak shematzam, shrei gamzeo mer kain. In other words, here he's making a claim that I lost two shvarim. And even though I don't know what you found, but he says, Bahavale Hayat Modim mixed a tina brura. In other words, the other person admits that he found two. So in other words, we're not in dispute that you found two, and now you're returning one. So it's like the equivalent of a tanis bari. Okay, so now back in the Gemara on the bottom line under Nal Pamel. Everybody with me? So the Gemara says, two lines from the bottom. Rabbi Yitzchak, lately, hamotzi b'tziyah lo yishav ne'tikin olam. So doesn't Rabbi Yitzchak satana, I remember we said that Yaakov shows up, Yitzchak shows up sometimes, but Avram doesn't show up. So here we have a case that the Rabbi Leibowitz said. So here we have Rabbi Yitzchak. So he says, doesn't Rabbi Yitzchak hold from our halach in the Mishnah that hamotzi b'tziyah doesn't take a shvua? And here he's got, you know, not every case. Sometimes you do take a shvua. So turn page on the top line in other days. So Nun Alpham Days 51b, page 102 on the top line. So Huda Amar Kribla Ezer Ben Yaakov. So Gemara says, Rabbi Yitzchak holds like a different Tana, i.e., Reb Lezer ben Yaakov, the and on the top line Rashi, who the Rak Rose ben Yaakov, the Hecha the Katavi like the Tanabari, Bokashub Lay Meshim Aveda. That if the person comes with the Tanas Bari, in other words, in Achidami's Moda, sometimes you're Meshim Aveda. In other words, I would have lost it, but know where, who, what, why. But if it's Tanas Bari, you take a Shua, according to Reb Lezer ben Yaakov. Let's see, Katani, we learned in the Braisa. Reb Lezer ben Yaakov there, Tamim Shtam Nishbal Tanar Asbo. Sometimes a person has to take a shvua from his own taina. He walks in based on his own statement. He like shoots himself in the foot, so to speak. He says, "Ketzad, mana lavicha biyadi." Let's say somebody dies, Reuven dies, and Shimon walks in and says, "Your father loaned me $100." He says, "V'chafi pras," but I paid half back. So nobody knows anything about the $100. But he walks in and says, "I must tell you, your father lent me $100, but I pay back half. I only owe 50. A reza nishba. So he, Shimon, has to take shvua. Motive makes sense. When you admit part of the claim, you have to take shvua. It's shvua deraisa. Zeu shenishba al tananatzmo. That's making a shvua from your own taina. There was like those people just sitting. Nobody's saying anything. You walk in the door. You're making all the taina. You have to make shvua. The chachamim omrim. But the chachamim say, Eino l'kmeisha v'edu patur. He's Shimon, he's like a Mesh Aveda, meaning, like, I lost this money, I don't know about it. It was like, I lost an object, and I don't know where, who, what, one. Guy walks in, and I must take a shua. Same thing, like, guy walks in off the street, he says, your father lent me $100, and I paid my 50. It's like, I wouldn't know one way or the other. So it's the same difference. It was just like a Mesh Aveda, we don't make you take a shua. So to here, we don't make you take a shua, according to the Chacham. Means on a dry level, you might be required to take a shua. But with the Kana Chachamim, the Mesh Aveda, you don't take a shua. So again, so we think that Reb Yitzchak is following Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. We have to, you know, kind of flesh it out. So the Gemara says on line 6, Reb Elazar ben Yaakov lately Mesh Aveda Patur. So doesn't Reb Elazar ben Yaakov concede that Mesh Aveda is Patur? Doesn't he confess, you know, admit that if somebody walks in with my lost object and I say there was more there, that the person does not have to take a shua? Doesn't Reb Elazar ben Yaakov agree with that? So if he does agree with that, why in this case does he say you do take a shvua? Because the guy's walking in off the street saying your father lent me $100. So the Gemara says, so now the Gemara changes the case a little bit. Amar Rav, the Toano Katan. So Rav says the case in the Braisa is not that nobody knows anything. In other words, this the you know, Reuven who died left a son, and the son might be 10 years old, but the son says, I know that my father lent you $100. The son says that. So the son can't be, you know, 100% sure, but it adds something, it makes it bari enough, according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, that now we're going to require Shimon to take a shua. So the Gemara says, katan midi mishash itbe. If a katan makes a taina, does that have any legal significance? Any standing that a katan says something? Batan. We learn the Mishnah of Sefer Shuot, a nishbain al tanat chere shot bekatan. A person is never obligated to take a shua as a result of the claim of a chere shot deaf mute, or a shot, a person who's deranged, or a katan. So the Gemara then revises its understanding of the Braisa, says, my katan gadol. What did we mean by katan? We meant a gadol, an adult child. So the child is 20 years old. And he says, I know my father lent you the money. Gamai karle katan. Why did we call him a katan? In other words, with respect to his father's transactions, he's a katan. In other words, he's not, you know, thoroughly versed with what his father did, but enough to articulate enough of a claim, at least according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, to make it a tanas bari, that now the person has to take a shua. That's according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. So again, let's focus on. So we're saying that Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, everybody agrees, if you're walking in, you know, all things being equal, you walk in and here's my object. I don't know one way or another, but you don't take a shua, Meshav Aveda. But according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, and we think Reb Yitzchak, if the person, you know, the owner lost object has a Tanas Bari, like with the two wilds tied together, then the person would take the shua. That's what we think. Wait, one second, let's go further. Now, he says, so the Gemara says, but if that's the pshat in the Braisa, so the pshat in the Braisa is that, what did I say? What's the name of the decedent in this case? Is it Reuven? Did I say that Reuven left a child who's an adult? He says, Ihachi Tana Atzmo Tana Chevu. So why would the Tana of the Braisa, again, the Tana of the Braisa says on line 2 and 3, Pamim Shadam Nishba al Tanat Atzmo. Sometimes a person makes a shua on his own Taina. In other words, from his words is the Taina. But here, the way we're explaining the Braisa, Reuven left the 20-year-old son, and the 20-year-old son is making the Taina. He says, Tana Nacherim Hu. So the Gemara says, Tana Nacherim Mahodar Atzmo. So Tana means, in Achinami, other people Taina, but he is the one who's Mahoda. It says, Kulu Tana Tanami Tana Nacherim Mahodar Atzmo Uninu. What does that mean? Every Mahoda of a Mixar is that way. So why would the Tana say in this case, blah, 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 blah? It's just you're saying it's a regular mode of mix-up case. So the Gemara says, you're right. Scratch what we said. We're going back with different shot in the Braisa. So again, we're trying to understand the Braisa, why Reb Elazar ben Yaakov says that the person has to take shua on Tana's Atzmo, but by Meshiva Veda, he should concede they don't take shua. So Ella, with Rabbi Kamifli, the Gemara is going back to our early shot that Reuven, the decedent, left a minor child around who makes the claim. But we said, but a minor child's claim is not a claim. So Ella b'derabba k'miflagi. The point of dispute between Reb Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim is Rabba's dictum. And Rabba's an Amora, but that's what they're arguing on. And here's like Rabbi Lindowitz is saying, it's a little bit of Nezikim coming in here now. The Amar Rabba, the name Amra Torah, Moda Mixetatani Shava. Why does the Torah say that a person is Moda Mixad, if you miss part of the claim, though I'm accused of using Reuben and Shimon, but Reuben makes claim of Shimon, Shimon makes part of the claim, why, and it was making a subfacial examination. It's clear the Torah says, you know, I show you Mark, you lose that, give me a vote to Arshad and Hem. So Chazal teaches that Moda Mixad has to make a Shua. Why is the Torah required to make a Shua? He says, Kazaka in the Mez Pana, Nebal Kobo. There's a presumption that nobody is like, has the brazenness. In other words, if Reuben lends $100 to Shimon, Shimon can't look Reuben in the face and say, you never lent me anything. That takes a lot of chutzpah. So nobody has that chutzpah there. He says, V'hai b'kuli by l'michbrei lai, he says he would really like to be kofer everything. V'hai lo kafre, the reason he doesn't, mishum v'le'in adam eiz panav z'nibal chobo, because nobody has so much brazenness. U'v'kuli by d'lodi lai, and he would like to admit to everything. He's not a bad sword. He'd like to admit to it all. V'hai lo odi lai, the reason he does not admit to it, ishtamuti p'nishtamit lai, he figures, let me just get away from this guy for a bit. Savar ad habu zuzi pranale. When I get the money, I'll pay him. In the meantime, let me tell him some, you know, like a cock and bull story, and I'll get rid of him. That's why I'm saying about this whole thing with motive mixat. But Amarachmana Rami Shu Ilabe, he hid Lodi Lekule. So the Torah says, in that case, we're going to impose a shua on Shimon to prompt him to admit the whole thing. Now, in this case, let's look at the last Rashi. Kazaka in a dummy's panav. There's a presumption that a person wouldn't be brazen enough to deny the whole claim. With Portakol, last Rashi, Hilkach b'shilodata mixad eno neman halashar. So for the moment, he's not believed concerning the pout that he denies. Rabbi Kuli by little copper, like he really wants to deny everything. The chitema. Now Rashi breaks up an important idea. The chitema lo nishba shara. Maybe he shouldn't take a shu on the rest. Why? The migo de chashamona chashnami shuata. If we suspect him to lie under his, that he's lying under through his teeth regarding the money, so maybe he's also chashed that he'll lie with the shua. So then the Gemara itself says that in Bav Metzia. So the Gemara says here, amamona lo chashed. In this case, we don't really suspect him of being a thief. Mid lo kafre b'kulei. He didn't deny everything. The high ki odi b'palga b'kulei nami by lo. He really would like to admit to everything. By lo odi lei. The reason he doesn't admit is low dad told the mixed life. We don't think that his intent is to steal from the person. He just wants to get away from now until he gets some money and then he'll pay him. That's what we think. So we think he's basically an honest guy. He won't lie under the oath, but he's coming up with this story. Let's see back in the Gemara. So that's the svara of Rabba. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov Savar. So that's Rabba's understanding of motive mixah. So now back to our situation with the 10-year-old and this claim. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov Savar Lo Shna Bo V'La Shabno Eino Meiz. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov says that a person isn't brave enough to deny, you know, the claim totally from the person he borrowed the money, and he wouldn't be brazen enough to look the child, the 10-year-old son, in the face and say, your father, you know, didn't lend me all the money. And it was, he wouldn't be that brazen. Deny everything. So he's not a Meshav Aveda. In other words, Meshav Aveda is, you know, like, I could say nothing, but I choose, I could say nothing. And then, but since I'm kind enough to come and bring you this money, so I shouldn't take a shvur. Here, he can't say nothing. In other words, he has to admit that he borrowed some of the money. He's not brazen enough to do that. So Reb Elazar ben Yaakov holds it's different than a Meshav Aveda. Rabbanan Savri and the Chachamim hold Bohu Deinu Meis. The person isn't brazen enough to look the lender in the face of Obed No Meis, but the son, he would be brazen enough. Ulo Meis Meshav Aveda. And since he's not Meis, he is a Meshav Aveda. So in other words, the Chachamim hold, look, the guy would have no, if he's a liar, would have no compunctions about lying to the son. The lender is not around. I have no compunctions if it would be the case, you know, if I wanted to lie to say he never lent me any money. But I'm not saying that. I'm saying he lent me 100 and I paid 50. So we believe him, according to the Chachamim. He's like a Meshav Aveda. Because if he really wanted to lie, he'd say I say nothing. He didn't loan me any money. But Reb Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, a person doesn't have the chutzpah to say that. So mainly he has to take shvua. So let's go back to our original issue. So the way it's coming out, the way they said, they're linking it up to this issue of Bari. So Reb Yitzchak is saying like Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov is saying that sometimes the person's claim is so certain, the person, you know, wouldn't have the chutzpah to deny it, or he wants to kind of say it also with the two bags and things like that. He makes a ton of... Let me tell you, the Orange Scroll has it nicely. One second.
There's one second.
21? We'll do, no. He said in footnote, yeah, 21, in summary, yeah. But on the second column. Reb Elazar, so he says, a son's claim for his father's debt, even in this state of death only, cannot be considered death, completely definite. The son's not completely aware of his father's dealings. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov nonetheless considers this a definite claim and assumes that the debtor cannot lie about it completely. The debtor is therefore obligated to swear the oath for partial admission. The sages, however, do not treat this as an absolute definite claim and assume that the debtor could be brazen enough to deny and try to speak debtor in. But by the same token, the owner of lost objects cannot be completely certain that the finder found them all, even when the objects were tied together and did not generally come apart. For this reason, the Tana Mishnah does not consider the owner's claim completely definite, and he therefore accepts the finder who returns one of the objects from having to swear with the other. Reb Yitzchak, on the other hand, treats the claim as definite in the cases such as purses, where once tied together, tend to remain that way. In this, he follows the view of Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, and therefore requires the finder to swear regarding the second purse. Okay, now, any questions comes to us, anything we did so far? All right.
I was going to say. No, I was going to mention there's a Ravusta story in the Alter Haim. A guy said that you owe me $100, and the other guy said he doesn't owe the $100. So he swore that he doesn't owe the $100, and after he swore, he paid him. He says, "Memonav shachs, you got to do asav sisa yosha toyve in Hashem." So he says, "If I swore and I didn't pay him, they're going to say, look at this chutzpahnik. He's willing to swear abinish tzibatzul. And if I go and pay him, then they're going to say, look, he was afraid of the shrew, so he paid him, but he really didn't want to pay. So he swore that he didn't owe the money, and he paid him again.
But Chazal teaches, like, you know, a person is concerned about...
Well, see, Sayosha, I told you by now.
Yeah. All right, let's... One last story here. Okay, this is our story time. Okay, today's doc discusses one who found lost objects. While one commuter from Bnei Brak was filling his car with gas for his trip home, he noticed that the man in front of him had placed his wallet on his car roof and went to pay for his gas. When this man returned, he hopped into his car and drove off and completely forgot all about his wallet. In other words, he goes to fill the gas, he leaves his wallet on top of the car, and somebody's observing it. And you've heard the story already. And then the guy drives off. So the observer sprang into action. He rushed to pay his bill, and within half a minute, raced off in the direction of the car with the wallet on the roof. Although he caught up fairly easily, he encountered a very strange reaction to his endeavor to get this man's attention. Although he honked and honked, the man completely ignored him. After a few minutes of this on the highway, he noticed that the wallet fell to the side of the road. The observer pulled over and picked up the forgotten wallet. When he arrived home, he checked the contents of the wallet. There was an Israeli identity card inscribed with an obviously Slavic name and a veritable fortune in $100 bills. As is well known, many non-Jews entered Israel in recent years, either with false papers confirming their Jewishness, or as the children of Jewish fathers and non-Jewish mothers. The Knesset even passed a law that granted prospective immigrants from the Soviet Union with only a single Jewish grandparent full Israeli citizenship under the law of return. So, exactly. So I don't know, but we're going to figure it out because there's no din on Sarah Taveda by a non-Jew. That's how I figured it is. Now, what was the likelihood that the man who had lost the wallet was actually Jewish? In other words, he's got this wallet. But it's just focusing on one of the Russian immigrants. In other words, it's not the whole Olam. It's just this an immigrant. No. We're not sending a gut reaction. We're doing what's the halacha. So the halacha is that if it's non-Jew, there's no obligation about Shabbos Aveda. But sometimes for Kiddush Hashem, we say you should do it. But then I'm finding this wallet's got $1,000 in it. You know, I'd like to know, what are my rights? So he says, what was the likelihood of the man who had lost the wallet was actually Jewish? On the other hand, the man might well be Jewish, in which case the finder was obligated to call the man's number and return his wallet. The man decided to consult with Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein Shlita regarding this question. That's the first, it's a good step, boys. You go to a Talmid Chacham, say, what should I do? Don't make my decision, this is what I think. You know, don't think I know Chumash Rashi, I'll figure it out. Go to a Talmid Chacham. So he says, there is no way to know if he is Jewish or not. This is what Rabbi Zilberstein is saying. Perhaps you are not obligated to call him, but you should anyway. Call him now and invite him to my house. Now, the man called, and the former Russian citizen whose picture matched the identity card arrived shortly after. When this man saw his wallet with all the money intact, he was so moved that he prostrated himself before his, angel of mercy, like Malach Rachamim, and kissed his feet. All right, that's the story.
That's how it ends?
That's the end of the story.
Can you give him $100?
I don't know what to tell you. Now, all right. Okay. All right, this is being recorded.
1,600 shekel, too much.
How much is the real check?
Because it was back and forth in a van. Anyway, long story short, I called him, and he said, "I have your money. I'm coming right back."
Oh, that's very nice. Thing.
Again,
that's very.
Have a good Shabbos, everyone.
No, I don't.